Billionaire David Rubenstein has donated hundreds of millions of dollars for monuments, museums, and historic sites around the Washington region. He calls it patriotic philanthropy. But why does he support these symbols of American history during a time of bitter partisan divide? WAMU's arts and culture reporter Michaela LaFrack has the story.
David Rubenstein and I first met 500 feet in the air at the top of the Washington Monument. The 70-year-old businessman was there to see the elevator he had just paid $3 million to renovate. You can hear it humming behind us. It used to break down a lot until he stepped in. Since we had such a good view of the National Mall, I asked him to point out some of the institutions he's donated to. Get ready. It's a long list.
On this side, I'm the chairman of the Smithsonian. We're now trying to redo the Hirshhorn Sculpture Garden. And then the National Archives, I've been involved in helping them with some things, so some other things.
Right there, where he says he helped out the National Archives, he's referring to the time he bought an original Magna Carta for $21 million and permanently loaned it to the museum. Casual, right?
And then the Arlington House, and then the Iwo Jima Memorial, and then, yeah, Lincoln, and we'll have some other things to announce.
His patriotic philanthropy also includes $9 million to the National Zoo's Panda Program, $50 million to the Kennedy Center, $10 million to the Lincoln Memorial, and on and on. Unsurprisingly, he says it's a pretty fun gig.
I get a lot of pleasure out of doing these things, and if I didn't do them and I died with more money, would I be a happier person? I don't think so.
Rubenstein is one of the dozen or so billionaires in the D.C. region, including President Donald Trump and Amazon co-founder Jeff Bezos. He earned his money from co-founding the global private equity company The Carlyle Group in 1987. His net worth is $3.5 billion, and he's pledged to give at least half of it away. Will Shafroth is the head of the National Parks Foundation.
He's in a very small group of people. His level of generosity is right up there.
The Park Service has a $12 billion maintenance backlog, and it relies on private donors to help out. Despite what you might think, national park upkeep isn't all covered by our tax dollars, not by a long shot.
Funding the parks is sort of a team sport. Federal government's never going to do the whole thing.
It's a team sport, sure, but Rubenstein's one of the only guys on the field, at least around Washington. And Shafroth says only four or five other people in the country donate to the national park system at his level. I met back up with Rubenstein recently near the Carlyle offices in downtown D.C., and I asked him why he thinks that is.
Do you think part of the reason is that people think it's the government's job? They should be, they're paying their taxes, and that's what...
That's part of it, yes. People want to solve the great issues of the day, I guess, and win a Nobel Peace Prize for those issues, and they're important if you can solve them. My standards are I'd like to start something that wouldn't otherwise get done, that I can see the results in my lifetime.
Rubenstein actually donates much more to medical research and education than he does to national landmarks. But it's the latter that drives him. The man loves American history. He even recently published a book of his interviews with prominent American historians. This really hit home for me when we get in his private SUV and drive, or get driven to, the Jefferson Memorial.
We're all going in the same car? Okay.
He was planning to announce this $10 million donation to renovate the memorial's underground museum. Now, if I were giving away $10 million, I'd be a bit preoccupied. But he spent the 15-minute drive telling me all about Jefferson's life story, the history of the monument's construction, and quoting directly from the Declaration of Independence.
We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they're endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights, and among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Now, that was...
But historians, of course, aren't the only people in his social network. He doesn't go out and party. He doesn't even drink. But he does have a lot of relationships with powerful people, including every living president. For example, every few months, he attends events at the White House and meets with President Trump. For many of the city's cultural leaders, that apolitical access is a godsend. Here's Kennedy Center President Deborah Rutter.
He's bipartisan. He's not a Trump person. He is not an Obama person. He is not a Bush person. He is David Rubenstein.
David has those relationships because he wants to help the country.
Smithsonian Secretary Lonnie Bunch.
And often when I think about political issues, I'll also raise it with David to get his guidance, not to ask him to call a president, but give me a sense of, you know, how I might move forward in some particular area.
Rubenstein does have some left-leaning tendencies. He worked for the Carter administration in the 1970s, and he gives to the Brookings Institution, which is seen as center-left. But he bills himself as a total nonpartisan. For one, he doesn't donate a cent to political campaigns.
I am registered as an independent. I know people on the Democratic side. I know people on the Republican side. I like them both, but I am out of politics.
You can take him at his word, but it's also impossible to be completely divorced from politics, especially for the mega rich. He benefits from certain tax laws, whether he advocates for them or not. And his company has made a lot of money from the actions of certain administrations. George H.W. Bush served as a Carlyle advisor, and Carlyle made a lot of money around the time of the Iraq War from investments in the defense industry. Michael Moore's 2004 documentary, Fahrenheit 9/11, called out Carlyle directly.
With all the weapons companies it owned, the Carlyle Group was, in essence, the 11th largest defense contractor in the United States.
So should rich people be celebrated for giving their money away, no matter how they earned it? I asked Rubenstein, and he responded in a very Rubensteinian way, with a quote.
There's a French writer, Balzac, who famously wrote, "Behind every great fortune, there is a crime."
What do you say to that?
If people are going to criticize me, I can't not do it because I think it's something that would upset them. I do it because I think it's right.
He knows some people do think that all rich people have committed crimes, but he doesn't. He says he never even set out to become super rich, but he worked hard and he had good luck. He still works all the time and spends his free time writing, conducting interviews, and prepping for board meetings. He also spends a lot of time talking to his three adult children about wealth and philanthropy, since, as he puts it,
children of wealthy mothers and fathers very often do not achieve as much as they want to because the wealth often inhibits ambition.
By contrast, he grew up in a working-class Jewish neighborhood in Baltimore. That day at the Jefferson Memorial, after he announced his $10 million donation, we walked up to see the statue of the third president. Jefferson was rich, too. But unlike Rubenstein, he was plagued by debt. His family even had to sell the family home, Monticello, after he died. Rubenstein looked up at him, and he started musing about his own wealth.
You know, if you have money, what are you going to do with it? You can be buried with it. That's not so good. Give it only to your children. That's not going to be so great for them. You can give it away while you're alive. That's probably the best thing to a good cause if you can find one.
He's found a lot of them so far, and he's still on the hunt for more. For WAMU, I'm Michaela LaFrac.